Well, good morning, everybody. I think you're very noble to come up here 5 minutes after you've had Lawrence, and hope you've all got a cup of coffee and managed to get some refreshment. I know that some of you weren't able to go to hear Lawrence, but I hope that those of you who did really appreciated what he had to say. It was wonderful to have him so down to earth. And so much on our side, I felt. That was lovely, wasn't it?
Yes.
It wasn't particularly men, but for us. And really, in a way, I'm following on from that, because my talk has been given to me, and it's God in My Ordinary Days. And the description I was given for the title was, evangelism isn't just about the platform or about Sundays or big personalities. It's about you in your ordinary, everyday situation, being released into your potential as a servant of God. And actually, that's enough, isn't it? I think that says it all. So, goodbye. But it's true. Shall I say it again? Because I think it's so important for us to realise. Evangelism isn't just about the platform. It isn't just about Sundays, going to church, ticking the boxes, doing the right things. Or big personalities coming and doing things and making you feel, oh, this is how it should be done. But it's about you in your ordinary, everyday situation, being released into your potential as a servant of God. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, it says, work hard and cheerfully at whatever you do, as though you were working for the Lord rather than for people. I'm going to ask you a question. Do you? When you work, do you work as if you're working for the Lord, not necessarily for people? That's a very difficult one, isn't it? If we're really honest, how can we do that? It's not easy. It takes a lot of discipline and a lot of time. And what is your ordinary day? What's an ordinary day for you? Think about your ordinary day. Today is not an ordinary day. I hope you're all actually enjoying not even having to kick those shirts under the bed, but knowing that you don't have to worry about them. It's not your problem today. But what is your ordinary day? Is it absolutely frantic? Is it multitasking? Is it exhausting? Is it wearying? Is it repetitive, boring? Whatever it might be. We all go through different situations in our lives, different circumstances, and different times, different seasons. I feel as if I'm a very privileged person these days because I'm living on my own. I don't have to kick any shirts under the bed, but if I do, they stay there because it's my fault. And I can eat if and when I want, as I want. And there's a lot of things where I actually can become very, very selfish about my life. So I have to think about it very, very carefully. How does your work make you feel? Is your work fulfilling? Is it important? Is it exhausting? Is it stressful? Is it boring? Is it repetitive? I remember one of the things that I noticed most as a young mother of four children, it was the repetitiveness that was so boring. It was always the routine that just got to me, because the repetitive things were boring. Do you consciously bring God into your ordinary everyday life? I'm sure you all say, oh, of course we do, of course we do. Yeah. I say my prayers in the morning, and I get up and then I get on with my day. But do we bring him into all the circumstances we find ourselves in? That's a totally different thing, isn't it? And how aware are you of opportunities to show his love to other people around you? Are you aware of other people around you? Do you know, I love London. I live only 20 miles from London and I really love it. But you know, I nowadays dread walking along Oxford Street. It's quite a broad, if any of you know Oxford Street, the pavement's quite broad, but you don't ever get anybody noticing where they're walking, except old ladies like me. And I'm stepping off the curb because somebody's Everybody's walking, looking at their mobiles completely, or talking in the mobiles here, and they've got their heads down. They are not looking at anybody else around them. They open a door and slam it behind them. They don't look behind them to see if anybody else is coming behind them. And you know, I once was going into Marks and Spencer's in Oxford Street, and I saw this quite elderly lady walking in a very crippled way towards the door. So I just waited for a minute and a half till she got to the door. She said, "I can't believe you've done that. Nobody's done that for me for years. All I've done was look and hold the door open. Not much of a big deal, is it?" But those are the sort of things that God is calling us to be aware of. The people around us, the things that are going on around us, and how we can make a difference. Some of us, like those people on Oxford Street, are so concerned about the pressures of just getting through a day that they don't even think about anybody else around them. And I want to ask you if you do. I don't want to send you on a guilt trip. Oh dear, she's telling me off. Do you pray at the beginning of the day that God would use you for his kingdom as you engage with others? How do you start your day? I'm quite sure all of you will spend a time with the Lord at some point of the day. It doesn't necessarily have to be at the beginning of the day. For mums, it probably is very early in the morning, because it's the only time you get a bit of peace. But do you actually ask God to show you how you can engage with his kingdom amongst your neighbours, amongst your work colleagues during the day? Jim Graham, who's a former pastor of our church and just a wonderful man, his comment on prayer was this: prayer is not getting God into my world to meet my needs, but getting me into his world to serve his purposes. And I just think that's a brilliant statement, isn't it? We're always saying, "Please God, bless this and bless that and help me with that and do this." And I'm praying for family situations in that way probably daily. But then I have to end my prayer by saying, "But not my will, Lord, but yours." But what we need to do in our lives is to say, "How do you want me to serve you today, Lord, in my ordinary everyday life?" Which kind of prayer is yours? Is it like mine? "And please God bless this and bless that and help me with that." Or is it, "How can I serve you today? How can I make a difference in your world today that will bless others?" The Message version of Matthew chapter 5 is captivating, I think. It's all about salt and light, and this is what it says: "Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavours of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it: you're here to be light, bringing out the God colours in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on your light stand, shine. Keep open house, be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven." And that's in a way what Lawrence was talking about, wasn't it? About being generous with our lives and opening up to others, but not grabbing them by the collar and saying, "Are you saved, sister?" or something like that, which will switch them off straight away. And, you know, as he said, people don't understand the jargon that we give them these days. They haven't a clue about it because there's no history, unless they're sort of my age, because there's nothing that's being taught to them that makes them understand. And that's why it was a really frightening experience to hear him say that 65% of people think Jesus is a myth. Just a story. What a are we going to do about it to tell people? And we have to tell people with our lives, with our living, with our way of living, rather than just by collaring them, as I said. There's a lovely story that John Stott told some time ago, obviously a long time ago, and he was talking about a mission that he went to for gypsies, and it was being led by a guy called Gypsy Smith. And Gypsy Smith was talking about mission and how to get involved with other people's lives. And this woman wrote to him afterwards, a gypsy lady, and she said, "Thank you for what you've said to me. I believe that God is calling me to be a preacher. But the only problem is I can never do it because I've got 15 children." And he wrote back and said, "Please thank God that not only has he called you to be a preacher, but he's already given you a congregation." Your children, your family, those around you are your mission field, if you're mothers. You wouldn't, if you were given 15 children to look after and to actually proselytize, you'd be thrilled to bits with that privilege. But because they're your own children, it's totally different, isn't it? But it's a lovely story, and it just actually reminds us of what it's all about. And another thing that John Stott said to somebody who said, "Would you pray for so-and-so? He's going into the ministry." And John Stott said, "What ministry?" "Oh, well, he's going to become a vicar." And John Stott said, "But we're all in ministry, every one of us, wherever we are, not just the people who put dog collars on and things. We are all in ministry. You are in ministry, so am I. Walking along Oxford Street, I am in ministry. Do I remember it? Please God, I do occasionally." Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, says about living in the light, "Live a life filled with love for others, following the example of Christ who loved you and gave himself as a sacrifice to take away your sins. And God was pleased because that sacrifice was like sweet perfume to him. Make the most of every opportunity for doing good in these evil days." That's not difficult, is it? We have to think about it and work on it. There's a lovely story in that. I had to go on a train to Leamington. I took the easy route rather than driving a couple of days ago. And I just wanted to take a book that would go in my handbag. So I looked through my bookshelf and found this little one. And it's called "Don't Make History, Change the Future" by Nat Summerfield, who heads up Urban Saints, which used to be Crusaders. And I have to tell you, I was absolutely captivated the whole journey there and back, and I did actually manage to finish it. He says at the beginning, "You'll finish it in an hour." I took 3 hours, but I'm the slowest reader on the planet. But I was absolutely captivated by it. And this is a little story that he tells, which I think is wonderful. He says, "Let me share my all-time favourite story as I bring this chapter to a close. It was in 1858, and a Boston Sunday school teacher named Kimball began visiting one of his students at a local shoe shop where the lad worked as a clerk. Through his faithful commitment, Kimball eventually had the privilege of leading the young boy to Christ. The young man's name was D.L. Moody. D.L. Moody grew up to become a powerful evangelist, and some 21 years later found himself in London leading a great spiritual awakening. A local London minister by the name of F.B. Meyer went along to hear Moody preach and was profoundly moved and affected by God's call on the man. Years later, Meyer found himself in the USA, where a young student by the name of J. Wilbur Chapman became a Christian at one of Meyer's meetings. Chapman became heavily involved in YMCA and during his time there met and discipled a former baseball player called Billy Sunday. Billy Sunday became another great evangelist during one of his crusades in a small town called Charlotte, and led many to Christ. The following year, The people who had found Christ at the Billy Sunday Crusades organized another crusade, inviting another eminent evangelist called Mordecai Ham to speak. Ham left the town 3 weeks later feeling discouraged due to the fact that only a handful of people had come to faith in Christ. But one of those new Christians was a teenage boy called Billy Graham, who went on to lead literally millions of people to Jesus all over the world. The point of this story is ultimately not about Billy Graham, it's about an unknown school teacher called Kimball, who nearly 100 years earlier committed to invest in D.L. Moody, just one boy, just one life. Because Kimball did that, he changed the future for millions of people. How do you change the world? How do you change the future? One life at a time. It's a good thought, isn't it? We just don't know who we can touch by the way we live our lives and the way we're working with people and the way we care about others in our lives. Now, we all live busy lives. That's very obvious, especially from chatting to some of you that I've been able to talk to. It's part of today's culture, isn't it? It's busy. But there's a difference between being busy and being hurried. Being busy might mean that we've got a very full schedule, we've got many activities and physically demanding events. But if we're hurried, we're often preoccupied and therefore unable to be fully present. And this is spiritually draining, and it causes me to be unavailable to God if I'm too hurried. Let me give you a little illustration of this. Again, it's lovely, the different seasons of life. With four children, I was always trying to get through the day, get them into the bath, get them to bed, or have the homework done, and that was the end of the day, and exhausted. But now I'm a granny, I have a different attitude, because if I have one of my grandchildren for the day, I put down off everything else that I'm doing during that day, and I can be totally committed to doing what my granddaughter wants me to do. And it's absolutely lovely to spend that time, all the time, just engaging. It's a privilege, it really is. I remember once with two other grandsons. They were very small, and we were going through this lovely woodland park nearby us, and I was stopping, and we were looking in ponds and looking at tadpoles and frogs and things, and poking them and feeding them, doing all sorts of things. The children were absolutely captivated, and my son said, "Oh, come on, come on, let's keep walking, come on, otherwise it's still going to be all day." But they're enjoying this. This is lovely. You know, they're absolutely involved with it and they're really enjoying it. So my son came on and he came and he started to see what they were doing and he became as captivated as they were. And I said, you see, that's the point. They are living in the present, in the now. Children, toddlers, small children live in the now. They don't care about 3 hours ahead. They're only thinking of now. And so often we are so hurried that we're not thinking of now. We're thinking of getting over in order to get the next thing done and the next thing. And actually, we can go through our lives not living life because we're always anticipating the future until it's too late and we realise what we've missed. Jesus was busy, but he was never hurried. And he encouraged his disciples to draw aside, didn't he, on many occasions, just to take time out, to be quiet, to pray, to think, or just to have a meal. And we need to get that balance in our own lives in order to be that salt and light and to be available to God. Just to take time, as we're doing this weekend. What we have to know is that people notice us in our off moments as much as they do in our fully present moments. Have you noticed that? And that's something that we have to be so aware of. People see us, perhaps when we're just not feeling that great or whatever. And there was a story by Bill Hybels that I read in one of his books that really horrified me. He had a conversation with a waitress at a restaurant which was very close to his church, and they often went there for meetings and for lunch and meeting up with people and so on, and they really enjoyed this restaurant. But he found out from this waitress, who was willing to open up to him, that they all dreaded the Christians coming in because they were bad-tempered, they were rude, they were not interested, they never gave tips and all the rest of it. What a reputation to gain just in a restaurant. We don't know, do we? There was a lovely story that happened to me a while ago, a couple of years ago now, but I was sitting in a Costa Coffee with a friend. We'd sort of hidden all ourselves away just to have a chat, a quiet little chat. And suddenly this rather old man came with white hair, looking rather bedraggled, and came over to me and said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I went, "Oh, please remind me, I'm really sorry I don't." He said, "I used to be your dustman." That was obviously back in the days where we all knew our dustmen. They all came every week. And he said, "Do you know what?" He said, "I've never forgotten you, because," he said, "you always gave us coffee every time we came up." And he said, "if your husband was around, he used to give us something stronger." And so we had a little chat about it. But afterwards, I talked to my friend and I said, "Do you know what? He noticed me. If I had been nasty to him and said, 'Well, you haven't done this properly enough,' he wouldn't have come up and spoken to me. He wouldn't have lovingly put his arms around me and gave me a great big bristly kiss." But you know, those are things that we have to be aware of. We are noticed all the time. And we are noticed if we're perhaps not doing the nicest things as well. And so we have to be very careful how we behave in and out of wherever we live and in our workplace. I wonder how many of you have already been and had food last night and breakfast this morning. How many of you actually took the time to speak to one of the waiters or to say thank you or how lovely? Do you know that those sort of things are so, so important to those people, because they're mostly unnoticed. They come and they take your plates away and they serve you and they look after you. And it's part of what they do. But to have a chat with them, I've already made one lovely lady was yawning at breakfast. And I said, "Oh, you obviously had a late night." We had a little banter as a result of it, and she was roaring with laughter by the end. That doesn't take much, does it? Do you care about the people who clean the loos on the service stations when you're driving up and down? Do you bother to talk to them when if you're on a long journey? Little ordinary things like that that can actually start people having a conversation. Why do you bother? Why are you doing what you're doing, whatever it might be? I know that that's a very small illustration, but all those people, those waiters and waitresses, they know we're a Christian organisation. How are they going to respond when we've gone, "Oh, they're grumpy, they're always complaining about somebody," or what? Let's hope that it's something that's very positive as a result of the way we love one another. How do you react to the behaviour of your children? If you're driving along and somebody does something terrible to you and cuts you up or something in the road, what's your reaction? Are you calm and lovely and wonderful about it?
You just wait.
Billy Graham said this: "We are the Bible the world is reading. We are the creeds the world is needing. We are the sermons the world is heeding." That's true. Whether we're being served with a meal, whether we're driving along on a motorway, whatever it might be, people are noticing us. And again, another comment by Bill Hybels in his book, Just Walk Across the Room. He said, Christ followers in all sorts of neighbourhoods must make the same bold decision to enfold unbelievers with the care, compassion and love of Jesus Christ. Because everywhere we turn in this world, we encounter people with withered minds who find themselves ensnared by psychological scars or sinful thoughts or selfish motives. People with withered hearts who see no purpose in today and have no hope for tomorrow. People with withered bodies who feel encumbered and who struggle to accomplish mundane tasks through the day. People with withered souls who don't yet know there is a God who loves them and who has paved a path for them to know him. But the astounding truth for you and me is that as we work to develop with friendships with anyone and everyone we meet, we might just be the one the Holy Spirit uses to heal some withered hands in our little corners of the world. Don't underestimate the opportunities that you have and the power that you have within your own areas of influence, your own circles, wherever you work, Lawrence said about, you know, standing at the school gate, wherever it might be, in the hospital, in the doctor's surgery, all of these different places that we find ourselves in from day to day or week to week. So, at the beginning of your ordinary day, what will you pray? What do you need to pray for? Are you prepared to look out for the opportunities to serve God in a new way? Maybe beginning today or tomorrow, or when you go back home, back to your normal routine. Can you think about ways to make a difference in your world? I don't know if any of you have heard about the organisation that seems to have grown like Topsy, called 40 Acts. Yes. Anybody been involved with it? Oh, one or two of you. I'm not sort of officially involved. In fact, I only read the article on the website, on their website, halfway through Lent this year. But it's 40 days in Lent, and each day you decide you're going to do something that will make a difference to somebody during Lent, 40 days. Now, I heard about it sort of probably a few days into Lent. As I said, I never looked at the website, so I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to be doing. But I thought, right, I'm going to make sure that I do something to make somebody happy every day during Lent. It is an amazing focus. It doesn't have to be anything big. You know, opening a door for somebody, saying hello to somebody, having a chat, lifting the phone to somebody you haven't spoken to for weeks or months or whatever, making a cake for a neighbour, finding out how they are, doing some shopping for somebody. There are so many little ordinary things that we can do that can make a difference. 40 Acts doesn't have to be just during Lent. You think, oh, goodness, over for another year now, can just be normal. You could start today, actually, to think about, what I loved about it was that it made my mind think outwards all the time. Where are people? What could I do? What can I make a difference? Could I talk to this person? Could I buy them a cup of coffee and walk away and they didn't know who bought the coffee? Sort of fun things like that, that don't cost very much. They don't take up much time, but they just make you think outwards. And they give you a different sort of focus on life. And actually, it makes you so happy. It's thrilling to see that you've actually done something that's made people go, oh, wow. They don't know who it is. It's mostly random acts of kindness that people don't know who's done it or why. And I just think that that's a fantastic idea that we can do through our lives. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at spotting your potential of doing something for somebody and getting alongside somebody, actually noticing their facial expressions. I've just actually given up, but I used to go to a leisure centre quite often to swim. And I'm one of these old-fashioned people that swim like this, you know? I don't do that. But I used to meet the same people there each time that I went quite often. And instead of saying, how are you today? I would look at them as we were swimming along the pool, you know, and say, you look a bit stressed today. Are you all right? Is there something going on in your life? Are you okay? I'd make a point of looking at their facial expression and trying to understand it. And suddenly, people would start telling me their problems. It was amazing. It doesn't have to be in a swimming pool. It can be in a coffee shop, whatever. The barista or whatever, talking to them, people that you see from time to time. Instead of just saying, hi, how are you? Say, are you all right? Look them eyeball to eyeball. Think about them. And actually, it's amazing the opportunities that you have just by saying something as simple as that. And you laugh, but there were times on several occasions in that swimming pool where I've come out and I've actually been wrapped in my towel, arm round them, praying for those people, and they haven't minded. And then the next time they come in, oh, I must tell you about such and such, and they start the conversation with me. Now, I can't say to you, oh, well, they all became Christians, ha ha ha. No, but maybe I made them start to think in a different way. If I'd gone to say, well, you ought to be a Christian, you know, they'd have run a mile, they'd have rather drowned in the swimming pool, I think, probably. But we have to be aware of opportunities like that. And, you know, in a way, that's what Activate's all about, isn't it? Friendship evangelism. Finding opportunities to care about other people. Maybe just to take them the first step to lead them towards the kingdom. So think about your present circumstances, your areas of influence, including where you work, where you live, where you meet with friends. What fruit of the Spirit do you need to help you with those people? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and so on. Which ones do you need for each different person? Be different for each one. And I just want you now just to take time, just a few minutes, to consider how you can take a new attitude away from this place this weekend. Start each day purposely aware of the needs and the lives of others. I don't always find it easy to meet up in groups and discuss. If you want to discuss, just for a couple of minutes, how you could maybe be accountable to one another, I want to do this, or I've had the idea to do that, or just thinking about ways in which you can make a difference. I'm just going to be quiet for a minute. If you want to chat amongst yourselves, fine. If you'd rather just be yourself on your own and think about it and pray about it, that's fine too. Just for a few minutes to consider where God is leading you and where you can make a difference to others.
Thank you.
I want to give you time to choose who you're going to go and listen to next, or maybe go and have a swim in the spa, so I don't want to hold you up any longer. But maybe during the weekend you can write down some of the thoughts that you have about the ways that you can change your life, or the way you can help others' lives to be changed. And also to change maybe the priorities of your day, in your ordinary day, in your ordinary life, so that you can focus perhaps on some of the more important things and perhaps not so much on the less important things. And again, that is something that Lawrence talked about earlier, wasn't it? So I'm just going to finish now with some words of Tom Wright. Every act of love, gratitude and kindness, every work of art or music inspired by the love of God and delight in the beauty of his creation, every minute spent teaching a severely handicapped child to read or to walk, every act of care and nurture, of comfort and support for one's fellow human beings, and for that matter, one's fellow non-human creatures, and of course every prayer, all spirit-led teaching, every deed which spreads the gospel, builds up the church, embraces and embodies holiness rather than corruption, and makes the name of Jesus honoured in the world. All of this will find its way through the resurrecting power of God into the new creation which God will one day make. That is the logic of the mission of God, God's recreation of his wonderful world, which has begun with the resurrection of Jesus and continues mysteriously as God's people live in the risen Christ and in the power of the Spirit, means that what we do in Christ and by the Spirit in the present is not wasted. Everything that you do, every small deed, every small thought, every small prayer is precious to God. And you, each one of you, is precious to God. Don't ever